A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been turning over a thought since we talked about the stethoscope this morning. He wrote in with a longer version of it. The stethoscope is a quiet technology, a simple tube that rewired diagnosis. And the pacifier, which we discussed once before, met real resistance when the modern version showed up. Daniel's point is that he loves when this show shines a light on the inventors, the tenacious and often quiet researchers whose work changed the world, people whose names aren't widely known. So he's asking us for a list. 10 inventors. Outsized positive impact on society. Not household names, not even well recognized to students of science. And he's asking the meta question underneath it. What does their obscurity reveal about how we credit innovation and what kinds of quiet research tend to get overlooked?
10 names. That's a lot harder than it sounds, because the moment you say someone is obscure, someone else says, well, I learned about her in my second year. We have to set the bar carefully.
We do. And I think the selection criterion isn't that nobody has ever heard of them. It's that a reasonably literate person, a student of science, would draw a blank.
Right. So no Rosalind Franklin. She's increasingly known. No Ada Lovelace. The point is, the quiet ones.
So let's pin down what we mean by a quiet technology before we start naming names.
A quiet technology is simple in design, often cheap to manufacture, but transformative in how a field or society operates. The stethoscope is the archetype, a wooden tube, later a rubber hose, that turned diagnosis from guesswork into auscultation. Before Laennec, a doctor would press an ear directly to a patient's chest, which worked, sort of, but it was awkward, imprecise, and frankly limited by the doctor's ear.
And the pacifier is the other example. A nipple and a shield. Reshaped infant care and parenting norms. People resisted it. Which tells you that even a benign object can threaten the way people think things should be done.
And that's the credit asymmetry Daniel is poking at. Why do some inventors become household names, Edison, Bell, Tesla, while others with equal or greater impact remain obscure? Some of it's patent battles. Some of it's corporate ownership of the invention. Some of it's the lone genius narrative, which flattens teams into one face. Some of it's media attention. And some of it's whether the invention is visible to the public or buried in infrastructure.
The traffic signal is visible. The geoid model of the Earth is not. One gets a name attached, the other gets a footnote.
So our structure is this. 10 inventors, grouped by domain. Medicine, navigation, computing, public health, everyday infrastructure. For each one, the invention, the scale of impact, and the reason they're obscure. And we're going to be honest about the fact that the obscurity often has a mechanism. It's not random.
Let's start with medicine, because that's where the stethoscope conversation began. And the first name is the man who invented it.
René Laennec, 1816. He was a French physician, and the story goes that he was examining a young woman with heart trouble. The standard method, ear to chest, wasn't appropriate. He remembered that sound travels through solid materials. He rolled a sheet of paper into a tight cylinder, placed one end on her chest, the other to his ear, and he could hear the heart with startling clarity.
A rolled paper tube.
That's the origin. He later built a wooden version. And the impact is enormous. He founded the field of auscultation. He could distinguish between pneumonia, tuberculosis, heart conditions, things that had been a single blur of symptoms. He wrote a treatise on the method, and it spread across Europe within years. The stethoscope became the symbol of the physician.
And yet the name Laennec isn't on the tip of anyone's tongue. His name is on a hospital in Paris. It's not on the device.
And that's the first mechanism of obscurity. The tool became so universal that it swallowed its inventor. The stethoscope isn't a Laennec scope, it's just a stethoscope, the name detached.
The second name is a cautionary tale. Ignaz Semmelweis. 1847. Hand washing.
Semmelweis was a Hungarian physician working in a Vienna maternity clinic. He noticed that the ward staffed by doctors and medical students had a much higher rate of puerperal fever than the ward staffed by midwives. The mortality rate was around 10%, sometimes higher, and he figured out why. The doctors were coming straight from autopsies to deliveries. They were carrying something on their hands.
He didn't know it was bacteria. This is before germ theory was fully established.
He didn't need to. He instituted a policy of hand disinfection with a chlorine solution. The mortality rate dropped to about 1%, a tenfold reduction, and his reward was that his colleagues rejected him. The medical establishment was insulted by the implication that doctors were killing their own patients. He was eventually committed to an asylum, where he died. His work was only recognized after his death.
That's the second mechanism. The evidence was quiet, and the audience was too proud to listen.
And that's a brutal one, because it means the obscurity wasn't an accident. It was active.
Let's move to infrastructure. Alice H. Barker, 1919. She patented a gas heating furnace with individually controlled burners.
This is a beautiful example of a quiet technology. Before central heating, you heated a room with a fireplace or a stove. Parker's design used a series of gas burners, each with its own valve, so you could heat different parts of a house to different temperatures. It's the precursor to modern zone control. The thermostat in your hallway, the ability to keep the bedroom cooler than the living room, that lineage runs through her patent.
And she was a black woman inventor in 1919. The patent was largely forgotten until recent scholarship dug it up.
Which is the third mechanism. The social standing of the inventor determined whether the invention was remembered. The patent existed. The idea was sound. But nobody built a mythology around her.
And she died before widespread adoption. She never got to see the thing she designed become the default.
Navigation next. Gladys West. This one is staggering to me.
The GPS one.
Yes. Gladys West was a mathematician at the Naval Surface Warfare Center in Virginia. She worked on satellite geodesy, which is the science of measuring the Earth's shape and gravitational field. GPS depends on knowing exactly where the satellites are, and that depends on having an accurate model of the Earth's shape. The Earth isn't a perfect sphere. It bulges at the equator. It has lumps and dips. West's work on the geoid, the true shape of the Earth, was essential to making GPS accurate.
So every time you use a map on your phone, you're relying on a model of the Earth that she helped build.
And she was doing this for decades, much of it classified. Her contributions weren't recognized publicly until very late. She was inducted into the Air Force Space and Missile Pioneers Hall of Fame in 2018. She was in her late 80s.
The fourth mechanism. Classification. The work was too important to talk about, so nobody did.
And that's a quiet technology in the purest sense. It's not even a device. It's a mathematical model. It's invisible by definition.
Granville Woods, 1887. The induction telegraph.
Woods was a prolific black inventor, dozens of patents. He was called the Black Edison, which is a backhanded compliment if I've ever heard one. His big invention was the induction telegraph, which allowed train stations to communicate with moving trains. Before that, there was no way to warn a train that another train was on the same track. Collisions were common. Woods's system used induction to send signals through the rails themselves.
So the rail becomes the wire.
Essentially. And it improved railway safety dramatically. He also worked on improvements to the telephone, the telegraph, electrical systems. He fought patent battles with Edison himself. And yet, his name isn't in standard histories of telegraphy.
The fifth mechanism. The history was written by the people who won the patent battles.
And the people who wrote the textbooks.
That's five. We're halfway. And we've already got a patent.
Let's go to blood. Charles Richard Drew, 1940s. He developed large-scale blood plasma preservation and organized the first blood banks.
This is the one that saved a lot of soldiers.
Drew was a physician and surgeon. He figured out how to separate plasma from whole blood, how to preserve it, and how to store it at scale. Plasma is more stable than whole blood and doesn't require refrigeration to the same degree. He set up blood banks in Britain during the Blitz and then in the United States. His work underpins modern transfusion medicine. Every time someone gets a blood transfusion, the logistics of that, the storage, the typing, the preservation, that's Drew's lineage.
And he's known in medical circles, but not to the public. His name is overshadowed by the Red Cross.
And there's a specific tragedy there. Drew resigned from the Red Cross over their policy of segregating blood by race. They were accepting blood from black donors but labeling it and storing it separately. Drew said that was scientifically baseless. He was right, and the fight cost him.
The sixth mechanism. The institution takes the credit, and the person who built the institution is written out.
Esther Lederberg, 1950. She discovered lambda phage and developed replica plating.
Explain replica plating for someone who's never been in a lab.
It's elegant. You have a petri dish full of bacterial colonies. You want to find mutants, say bacteria that are resistant to an antibiotic. You press a piece of velvet on a block onto the dish. The velvet picks up a tiny sample of each colony. Then you press the velvet onto a new dish with the antibiotic. The colonies that grow on the new dish are the resistant ones. You can go back to the original dish and find exactly which colony they came from.
Velvet. That's the quiet technology.
A piece of fabric on a wooden block. It enabled the isolation of mutants, which is foundational for molecular biology, for antibiotic resistance research, for genetics. And she discovered lambda phage, a virus that infects bacteria, which became one of the most important model systems in all of molecular biology.
And her husband, Joshua Lederberg, won the Nobel Prize.
In 1958, for work that she was deeply involved in, her contributions were often attributed to him. She was a brilliant scientist in her own right, and the Nobel Committee looked at the marriage and saw one scientist.
The seventh mechanism. The credit went to the person standing next to her.
And that's not a footnote. That's the main story.
Garrett Morgan, 1923, the three-position traffic signal, and 1914, an early gas mask.
The traffic signal is the one everyone interacts with. Before Morgan, traffic signals had two positions, stop and go. The problem was the transition. A car approaching a green light that suddenly turned red had no warning. Morgan added the third position, the caution, the yellow light that gives drivers time to clear the intersection.
So the yellow light is his.
The yellow light is his, and it reduced accidents immediately. His gas mask, which he called the safety hood, was used to rescue workers trapped in a tunnel explosion under Lake Erie in 1916. He and his brother went into the tunnel themselves and pulled out survivors. And the city of Cleveland initially declined to honor him because he was black.
The eighth mechanism. The invention was adopted, but the inventor was not.
And that's the part that stings. The safety hood saved lives in front of witnesses, and the response was to pretend someone else had done it.
Alice Ball, 1915. The first effective treatment for leprosy.
This one is hard to talk about. Ball was a chemist at the University of Hawaii. She was 23. She developed a method to make Chalmugra oil water soluble so it could be injected. Chalmugra oil had been used topically for leprosy for centuries, but it was thick, it was unpleasant, and it didn't work well. Ball's method transformed it into an injectable form that actually worked. It became the standard treatment for leprosy for decades.
And she died at 24.
She died before she could publish. A male chemist at the university, Arthur Dean, continued her work and published it. He called it the Dean method. Her name was removed. It was only in the 21st century that her contribution was recognized.
The ninth mechanism. The work was stolen, and the thief named it after himself.
And the fact that she was a black woman in 1915 meant there was no one to fight for her.
Yvonne Brill, 1960s and 70s. The hydrazine resistor jet propulsion system for satellites.
This is a beautiful piece of engineering. Satellites need small thrusters to stay in their proper orbits, to adjust their position, to point their antennas. Brill invented a thruster that used hydrazine as a propellant, but instead of just burning it, she ran it through a resistor jet, which uses electrical resistance to heat the propellant further, making it more efficient. The exhaust velocity goes up. The satellite gets more thrust per pound of fuel.
So the satellite lasts longer.
It's now standard on communications and weather satellites. It extended the life of satellites by years. And when she died in 2013, her obituary in the New York Times led with her beef stroganoff recipe.
I remember that. The obituary was rewritten after an outcry.
It was. The first line described her as the world's best mom and a great cook. The satellite work was in the third paragraph, and that sparked a real debate about how women inventors are remembered.
The tenth mechanism. The obituary writer looked at her life and saw the kitchen first.
And that's not a small thing. It's the same mechanism as Esther Lederberg. The eye goes to the domestic, the supporting role, and misses the actual work.
So we have 10, and the mechanisms are clear. The tools swallowed the inventor. The audience was too proud. The social standing erased the name. The work was classified. The history was written by the winners. The institution took the credit. The credit went to the spouse. The invention was adopted, but not the inventor. The work was stolen, and the obituary looked in the wrong room.
That's a grim list, but it's also a useful one because it tells us what quiet research looks like. It's often done by people who aren't in a position to promote it. It's often done in institutions that absorb the credit. It's often done on infrastructure that the public never sees. And it's often done by people who aren't the right gender or the right race or the right social class for the history books.
What does that do to who gets funded, who gets hired, whose work is taught?
It distorts all of it. If the story of innovation is always told as a story of lone geniuses, then the people who do the quiet work, the teams, the technicians, the mathematicians, the ones who aren't good at self-promotion, they get filtered out. And the next generation learns that the way to be remembered is to be loud.
And the loud ones aren't always the ones who did the work.
Right. The loud ones are often the ones who are best at claiming the work.
Let me ask you something. You're a retired pediatrician. You've been in medicine. Did you ever work with someone whose name should be on something and isn't?
Constantly. The nurse who noticed the pattern, the lab tech who refined the technique, the resident who caught the error. Medicine is full of quiet inventors. They're just not called inventors. They're called staff.
That's the point Daniel is making. The category of inventor is too narrow. It only includes the people who filed the patent.
Or the people whose patent became famous.
If quiet technologies are all around us, why do we only remember a handful of names?
Because memory is a technology, too. And it has the same biases as every other technology. It's built by people with power, and it tends to preserve the people who look like the builders.
That brings us to the next part of this. What do we do about it? Is the answer just to teach more names?
I don't think it's just a curriculum problem. It's a narrative problem. The story of invention is told as a series of eureka moments by solitary men in labs. The reality is that invention is incremental, collaborative, and often done by people who aren't in the lab at all. The stethoscope was a rolled paper tube. The replica plating was a piece of velvet. The resistojet was a clever use of waste heat. None of these required a genius in a garret. They required someone paying attention.
The people paying attention are often the ones with the least power to be heard.
Which is why the mechanisms we listed are so persistent. They're not bugs in the system, they're features.
Let's talk about the knock-on effect. If we can't name these inventors, what does that say about our education and our collective memory?
It says our education is optimized for memorizing the winners, not for understanding the process. We learn Edison and Bell because they won the patent wars and the publicity wars. We don't learn the people who made their work possible. And that's a loss, not just because it's unfair, but because it gives students the wrong model of how innovation actually happens.
The lone genius myth isn't just false, it's harmful. It tells young people that if they're not the solitary brilliant figure, they can't contribute.
It tells institutions that they should fund the loudest person in the room, not the person doing the quiet work.
Let's go back to a couple of these for a moment, because I want to make sure we're not just listing names. What did Laennec actually change in practice?
Before Laennec, a doctor diagnosing a chest condition had to rely on symptoms, percussion, maybe the patient's own description. After Laennec, the doctor could hear the difference between a pneumonia and a tuberculosis. He could hear a heart murmur and know which valve was involved. It turned diagnosis from an art into a science, and it did it with a tube.
Semmelweis, the mortality drop, 10% to 1%, that's not a rounding error.
That's the difference between a maternity ward and a death trap, and he did it with a chlorine solution. The simplest possible intervention.
Gladys West, she never built anything. She modeled the shape of the Earth.
That model is now inside every phone, every car, every aircraft. The quietest possible technology, pure mathematics.
Esther Lederberg, a piece of velvet.
It gave us the tools to study antibiotic resistance, which is now one of the biggest threats in medicine. The tool that lets us understand the threat was a piece of fabric.
Von Brill. Waste heat.
She figured out how to use the heat that was already there to make the satellite more efficient. It's the opposite of a flashy invention. It's an optimization. And it's on every communication satellite.
Garrett Morgan. A yellow light.
The yellow light. the thing we all stare at, his.
Alice Ball. She made an oil injectable.
It treated leprosy for decades. The first effective treatment. She was 23.
Charles Drew. He organized blood.
He built the logistics that made transfusion possible at scale. The blood bank is a storage system, and it saved countless lives in the war.
Granville Woods. He made the rails talk.
Trains stopped colliding. The induction telegraph is a communication system. It's infrastructure.
Alice Parker. She made the house warm in zones.
We all live in her house now. Central heating with zone control. She patented it in 1919.
The patent is clear. These aren't flashy inventions. They're quiet ones. And the people who made them weren't flashy people. They were tenacious. They kept working. And they were overlooked.
The overlooking isn't a passive thing. It's active. It's structural. It's the same story told over and over.
Which is why Daniel's question about what this reveals is the more important question. The list is fun, but the mechanism is the point.
The mechanism is that credit flows to the people who are best positioned to claim it, not to the people who did the work.
23. Alice Ball was 23 when she started at the University of Hawaii. She died at 24. I was a patent clerk in Alexandria, Virginia in the late 70s. Satellite Office. I processed filings for a small inventor, a man named Mr. Pemberton. He had a device for improving the clarity of radio signals. He'd bring in homemade peach preserves. Every filing, a jar of preserves. His employer claimed the patent. The company said the work was done on their time, with their equipment. Mr. Pemberton said he built the prototype in his garage. The examiner couldn't understand the diagram. A bunch of squiggly lines that looked like a bowl of spaghetti. The filing was rejected. Mr. Pemberton stopped coming in. I don't know what happened to him.
The diagram. That's the part that gets me. The idea might have been sound, but the paperwork failed.
The paperwork fails a lot. The people who can't draw a clean diagram, the people who can't afford a lawyer, the people who don't know how to describe their own invention in the language the office wants, they get filtered out.
Did you ever get the recipe for the peach preserves?
No. He never wrote it down. But I still have the jar. It's in the garage. Next to the taxidermied squirrel.
The quiet inventors are the ones who can explain their own genius in a way that fits the paperwork.
Sometimes it's bad luck and bad handwriting. Not everything is a conspiracy. Sometimes a man invents something and the diagram looks like spaghetti and the company takes it and that's the end of it.
The jar of preserves is the only record.
The jar is a record. It says he was here. It says he brought something.
The squirrel too, apparently.
The squirrel is unrelated.
The point is that the system is built for people who can navigate the system. The quiet inventors are often the ones who can't. And that's not a flaw in them. It's a flaw in the system.
The system doesn't care. That's the thing. The system is a set of forms. It doesn't know who's a genius. It just knows who filled out the forms correctly.
Mr. Pemberton didn't.
Mr. Pemberton brought peach preserves.
Which is a different kind of currency.
It's a better kind. But it doesn't get you a patent.
The question is, how many Mr. Pembertons are there? How many people whose work is in the infrastructure around us, and we'll never know their names?
That's the open question, and it's not answerable. But it should change how we think about the history of technology.
The cutting room floor. There's a detail I wanted to include. Lennox's first stethoscope wasn't actually a wooden tube. It was a rolled-up piece of paper. He used it on a young woman with heart trouble because he was too embarrassed to put his ear to her chest. The entire field of auscultation began with a moment of social awkwardness.
That's the kind of thing that should be in every textbook. It's not the eureka moment, it's the moment of discomfort.
The next quiet technology might be in the patent clerk's inbox right now, filed under a name we'll never learn.
Or in a garage, next to a taxidermied squirrel.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping the show running.
If you have your own nominations for quiet inventors we missed, email us at show@myweirdprompts.com. We'd love to hear them.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.